Chapter 6. It was already in the 80s when I slumped into the kitchen in my itchy woolen uniform on the first day of school. "Ta-da!" my mother said. I gave her a dirty look. It had occurred to me that Jack and I would be starting out of the house at the same time each morning, and that St. Anthony's school was on his way to work. From that, I had perfected my fantasy. I would arrive in the MG amidst the confusion of buses, share a private laugh with Jack, then swing the door open to my newfound popularity. My hair would have come out as sleek and straight as Marianne Faithfull's. By lunchtime, I'd be class president. But Jack had left early that sticky morning. Grandma placed a bowl of cream of wheat in front of me and turned on the portable table fan. My mother said she refused to think of the end of summer vacation as a tragedy, and gabbed on and on about the Powder Puffs, a ladies' bowling league she'd just joined. They both saw me off at the front door. Ma squeezed my hand and told me I was pretty. By the time I trudged the half mile to school, my hair had frizzed, and my sweaty hand had stained the cover of my new blue loose leaf. St. Anthony saved sister presentation for the eighth graders. A hard little nugget of a woman, seemingly unbothered by heat or humidity, she began our year with a review of the school's code of conduct, delivering several major tenets by rapping her hooked pointer against the chalkboard. She commissioned us, the eighth-grade class, to set an impeccable example for the younger grades and hinted that horrible things might happen to the imprudent student. Here she established eye contact with Rosalie Pizik, who chose not to take her seriously. We spent the morning filling out forms and copying sister's classroom rules and policies into our notebooks. I ate lunch surrounded by the usual empty folding chairs. In the afternoon, our class studied Democracy in Action by electing Kathy Mahoney class president for the third year in a row. By the end of the school day, only two of my classmates had spoken to me. During supper, Ma repeated her same drab line, "Give it time." She and Grandma were both abandoning me for the evening. Grandma heading to bingo and Ma to the duckpin alleys with the Powder Puffs. Sister had assigned us science and religion, about a zillion pages. In the mirror, I watched my mother's reflection blot lipstick on a tissue pressed between her lips. She was preparing herself for bowling in the same intense way she got ready for dates. "Don't get upset or anything," I said, "but I think I may have cancer of the stomach." "Oh, Dolores, it's just your nerves." "Grandma says Rita started working second shift this week." "Poor thing. She hates it." "Stop changing the subject. You should take me to see a doctor tomorrow. It feels like there's a tumor or something growing down there." She bent over and began to brush her upside-down blonde hair. "Gee," she said, "you're not pregnant, are you?" Through the V-neck of her blouse, I saw the black lace bra, her bouncing breasts. "Are you? You're the one with all the boyfriends." She straightened up and pointed the brush at me. "Don't be fresh," she said. Grandma stood in the doorway, clutching her purse and scowling. "I told Judy Mumphy 6:45, Bernice. Last time you drove us, we got stuck way in back with those noisy fans blowing a draft on us. We were chilly all night. Poor Judy couldn't even hear the numbers." "Get in the car, Ma. I'll be right there." She leaned over and kissed me. "Just give it time, sweetheart. I've got to run. That stomach stuff is just nerves or greasy food or something. You take my word for it. Sister Mary potato chips." "Next time you go crazy again, I'll tell you it's greasy food. See how you like it." Ma's face fell. She walked out of the room and down the stairs, slamming the front door on her way out. I picked the tissue off her bureau and studied the three interlocking coral O's her lipstick prints had made. They reminded me of a Chinese ring puzzle my father had bought me once, a long time ago. For days I had sat at the picnic table out back on Carter Avenue and tried unsuccessfully to undo it. Daddy hadn't called me since the beginning of summer. When I'd asked Ma if he'd been sending my child support money, she told me we were getting by fine. That if I needed anything, all I had to do was ask her. Grandma answered me more directly. No, he hadn't. The tattoo parlor across the street was dark, but Roberta's light was on in back. There was a motorcycle parked by the side entrance, the same one I'd seen there all week. In the quiet, I heard Roberta's laugh. The street lamps along Pierce Street came on. I sat down at the hallway phone table and began dialing Jeanette Nord's number, then hung up. It took me a whole minute's worth of concentrating to remember our old phone number on Bobolink Drive. I got out my homework and flopped down at the kitchen table. Yoo-hoo! His hands were cupped over his eyebrows, his outline blurred by the back screen door. "What'd I do, Del Rio?" he laughed. "Scare you?" "Not really," I said. "I was just studying." "Sorry to bother you, but our stupid fan conked out and I can't find our Phillips screwdriver. Granny have one I could borrow?" "You can look," I said. "Come on in." He had on his cutoffs and nothing else. I looked away. "Man, this heat, huh? You could fry a steak up there on our kitchen linoleum." I yanked open the cabinet drawer where Grandma kept tools. "Is it in there?" His hands fished among the tools, held fistfuls of them. I slid my flip-flops on and off my feet as I watched him. "Everything but," he said. "Oh, well, sorry." "That's okay. Motor's probably shot anyway. Just thought I'd crack her open and take a look since I don't have anything better to do." "My mother said Rita switched shifts." "Yeah. Well, thanks. Oh, by the way, let me know if you ever want to ride to school. I passed you this morning. I go right by there." "You did? You do? Okay, thanks." The screen door slapped shut again. The side stairs creaked. I went back to my science chapter. He was up there on their tiny porch. I heard him whistling. I washed my face in the kitchen sink, then went up to my room and changed into my pink seersucker blouse. Back downstairs, I yanked the fan cord so hard, I thought for a second it was going to snap off. I coiled it around my wrist, slid on my flip-flops, and headed up to him. He was on the porch floor, his legs dangling over the edge. The only clear thing was the burning end of his cigarette. "You can borrow this one if you want," I said, holding out the fan. "I'm not really using it."
"Oh, that's okay. Unless you're sure."
"Here." There was an unfinished pyramid of beer cans next to him. He balanced his cigarette over the edge of the floor and reached for the fan.
"You're a sweetheart," he said. "How about a Coke? Dish of ice cream?"
"No, thanks."
"You sure?"
"Well," I laughed, "ice cream, maybe." He got up and went inside. I turned and watched his bare back as he moved around the kitchen.
"How's school treating you?" he called out. "All we got is vanilla."
"That's fine," I said. I hung my legs over the edge of the porch and shook off my flip-flops. They fell, without a sound, to the ground below. Across the street, Roberta's light went out. I picked up Jack's cigarette and rolled it between my thumb and finger. An inch of ash fell away. He came out holding my ice cream in one hand and Grandma's whirring fan in the other, a new can of beer in the crook of his arm. He'd plugged the fan into an extension cord that ran back inside. I pushed over and made room for him, sitting cross-legged with the beer cans in front of me.
"How can you tell when you've got an elephant hiding out in your refrigerator?" he said. He sat down next to me and took a swig of beer. His furry leg brushed my leg.
I shrugged.
There's a set of tracks through the butter. My laugh wasn't my natural one.
You crack me up, I said. I love listening to your show.
He gave me a wide smile but said nothing. He sipped more beer. The fan sounded incredibly loud. I'm glad somebody out there does, he finally said. Station manager says my humor's too... what was his word? Fanciful. Says I've got to get a better understanding of the middle-aged New England audience.
He took several long drinks from his beer can, then reached in front of me and added it to his pyramid.
If he doesn't renew my contract, I'm fucked.
The word made me flinch. You should be on a station that plays decent music, I said. You're too good for those old farts.
Now what would your grandmother say if she heard that, he said. Speaking of old farts, I said.
He let go a laugh.
Ah, come on, she's a nice old lady.
That's what you think. My mother had this brother who died when he was 19. Grandma didn't even cry or anything. Her own son.
Maybe she cried in private. People do lots of things in private. How'd he die?
He drowned. It's sort of weird, really, because my grandparents, my father's mother and father, they drowned too, in a hurricane. It was a real long time ago, way before I was born. So I had relatives on both sides of my family who drowned.
Well, this conversation sure is cheerful, isn't it?
Jack laughed. I felt the heat in my face. I shut up and ate my ice cream. Pierce Street looked different from up here. Smaller, more organized. Well, I said, I better get back to my homework. But it was Jack who got up.
Don't go yet, he said. You're good company. I'll be right back.
The light went on in their bathroom. I heard him peeing. He came out with a new beer.
I'd love to make a switch, believe me, he said. There's a top 40 station up in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, that's looking at me, but Rita doesn't want to move.
I don't want you to either. This house was so boring before you guys got here, I said. The lady who rented your apartment before you was a drunk, and she had this retarded little dog. He was smiling at me, running his fingers through his chest hair.
Oh, yeah?
He said. Yeah. His hand touched my arm.
How good are you at keeping secrets?
He asked. The fan blowing against my back caused a shiver. My spoon clinked against the ice cream dish. Okay, I said. Fine.
The reason she doesn't want to move is because she's pregnant.
Rita? She is. He pulled his knee up against his chest, took a sip.
Life stinks, he said. Maybe that dead uncle of yours was one of the lucky ones. She's already lost two babies, you know?
Two?
Which is why we left my last job in Newark. I was up for the morning show, 50,000 listener potential, perfect exposure to the New York guys. You bored out of your skull yet? Just tell me. I'm not bored. She'd go nuts if she knew I was telling you all this. It'll be okay this time, Jackie, I promise, she says. Even if something happens, it'll be all right. You may have noticed my opinion doesn't fit into any of these little decisions she makes. You catch that? So now here's this baby coming, and Randolph says I'm too, what do you call it, too fanciful. Says he's waiting to see what happens before he renews me. Wait till she hears that one. She'll shit the kid right out her other end. My stomach heaved a little.
I better go, I said.
But I didn't move.
He looked over at me and smiled.
Dolores del Rio, he said. You and me against the bad guys, right?
I didn't answer.
He reached down and touched my bare foot.
Right?
Right.
What are you, he said, ticklish or something?
The word ticklish made me flinch. I let out a nervous laugh.
You are, aren't you, he said. See, I told you.
His grip tightened around my ankle. His fingertips danced along the sole of my foot. Come on, I said, cut it out. I could fall right off this.
He was on top of me, his knees pressing into my sides, his fingers jumping and jabbing. You ticklish here? What about here?
My head thumped back against the porch floor, and I bucked and shoved, unable to breathe. I couldn't stop laughing. His hair flapped on and off his forehead as he rubbed against me, tickling and poking.
Stop it, okay? Really? I squealed.
But he wouldn't stop. My head rocked back and forth, and I suddenly saw how close I was to the fan. My leg shot out. The tower of beer cans flew off the porch, clattering down in the alley. The noise made him stop. He was laughing, breathing heavily. His beer breath came out in damp, sour blasts.
"Do you mind?" I said. "You're crushing me to death."
"Phew! Just don't ever let me hear you say you're not ticklish," he laughed. He got off me. "Teach you a lesson."
I was coughing, then crying, hard and without control. He laughed at me.
"Hey," he said, "stop it. What's the matter?"
When I could speak, I told him I was sorry.
"For what?"
"For acting so stupid." He reached for me, but I pulled away.
"What'd I do? Scare you or something? I was just trying to cheer us up. All this talk about death and bosses and shit. What you think I was doing?"
"Don't mind me," I said. "I'm just an idiot." I got myself up and started down the stairs, smearing away tears.
"I still don't get it," he said.
He was leaning over the railing.
"First you're laughing your head off, then... What's the matter with you, anyway?"
Up in my bedroom, I heard his knocking and calling down at the back door. I let the phone ring and ring, echoing up the stairwell from Grandma's front hall. All he was trying to do was cheer us up, I told myself. No wonder nobody talked to me at school. I acted so retarded. Ma and Grandma were home. I positioned myself on the bed, my science book in my lap. Grandma went by my room, grumbling to Ma about hooligans and beer cans and decent people's property. Ma came in. She sat down on my bed and brushed my bangs away from my forehead. "I got a strike and 2 spares tonight. How you feeling?" I shrugged, without looking up from the book. "Do you mind?" I said. "I'm tired, and I have to get this reading finished." "Okay, honey. Good night. I love you." She waited several seconds for me to say I loved her, too. I wanted to say it. Risk it. It wouldn't come out. Later, in the dark, I hugged myself and thought about Uncle Eddie. Not being able to breathe up there on that porch, having no control of it. That was what his drowning must have felt like. My right side was sore. There was a long scratch on my arm. I was still awake when Rita got home from work. Their voices murmured up there together. My foot wouldn't stop twitching. My mind wouldn't shut off. It must have been something else I had felt up there when he was on me, tickling me. His knee or his elbow or something. He and Rita were married. They were having a little baby together, for pity's sake. I was just being a pig and an idiot. I was pitiful. "How good are you at keeping secrets?" he kept asking me. "Do you take sugar or are you sweet enough?" I heard Grandma say in the cheeriest of voices as I came down the stairs the following morning. Somewhere in the night, a storm had taken away the hot, gluey air. A cool breeze was flapping the living room shades. In the kitchen, my eyes bounced from Jack's red-striped shirt to Grandma's smile to the brown cardboard bakery box on the table. Jack was sitting in my mother's place. Ma was in mine, biting into a donut.
"Well, here she is," Grandma announced with fake enthusiasm.
She dragged the kitchen stool to the table and patted the seat.
"Sit down, Dolores, and have one of these delicious pastries Mr. Spike brought us."
Jack raised one of our coffee cups to his lips and smiled. The room smelled of aftershave. His red and white pinstripes looked so crisp and clean, I wondered for a second if I'd made up the evening before.
"Hey, Dolores," my mother said, "how can you tell if an elephant's been inside your refrigerator?"
There was a sprinkle of powdered sugar on her khaki blouse. Jack's smile looked more than ever like Uncle Eddie's.
"I don't know."
"Because he's left tracks in the butter," she and Grandma grinned in anticipation.
"Oh," I said, "that's a pretty good one."
Inside the box were three donuts, top-heavy with whipped cream and jam. At Ma's insistence, I lifted one out and onto my plate.
"Is little Rita getting used to her new schedule?"
Grandma asked.
"Well, she dragged herself in last night, nodded at me as though she remembered me from somewhere, and then pulled the covers up over her head. She's still snoring up there."
Ma began telling a story about when my father worked nights, right after they got married. I poked at the donut and brought a forkful to my mouth. The whipped cream was warm and yellowy. From the corner of my eye, I saw Jack watching.
"Well," Grandma said, refilling his coffee cup, "you tell Rita for me to lock her car doors when she's driving back and forth after dark. All these cuckoo heads and beatniks these days. Some wild Indians dumped beer cans in the alley last night. I guess they just like the thought of decent people having to clean up their messes for them."
The table fan was on the counter, its cord wrapped tightly around the base.
"Did you hear that thunder last night?" Jack said. "Wasn't it something?"
I had slept through it.
"You must be exhausted this morning, Ma," my mother teased Grandma.
"She makes the sign of the cross at every lightning bolt, Jack."
Grandma made a face.
"Well, this house hasn't been struck yet, has it, Miss Smarty Pants?"
I pushed my plate away. "I'm not very hungry," I said.
"Dolores, Jack said he'd be glad to drive you to school this morning," Ma said.
"That's okay. I don't mind walking."
"It's no trouble at all," Jack said. "Really?"
At the door, Grandma brushed the sleeve of my uniform and clutched me by the wrists.
"If those nasty DP sisters give you any trouble this year, just tell the teacher. Or better yet, send them to Mr. Spite and me."
Her newfound sassiness was all for Jack's benefit. She referred to him as Mr. Spite when talking to me.
What a laugh, I thought.
Which of us knew Rita was pregnant, me or her? Who did she think he told his secrets to? Outside, birds chirped, and Pierce Street was shiny from rainwater. My flip-flops sat neatly side by side just outside the door. Had my mother placed them there? Had Jack?
"Forgot to put the top up last night," he said.
He had draped towels over the seats of the MG. I sat down on the dampness, slammed the door, locked it, then unlocked it again. I stared away from him and out the side. When he reached over for the stick shift, I pressed my knees together.
"How come you bought us donuts?"
"Oh, I don't know. Guess I just like to talk to people at breakfast. Don't forget, I spend the rest of the day talking to a microphone and a bunch of sound equipment."
I started shaking. Stopped. Started again. There was a hole in his dashboard where a radio was supposed to be. He smiled at nothing, zipping down Pierce Street.
"Nasty DP sisters," he said.
"Rosalie and Stacia Pizzik," I said.
These two girls who used to bug me last year. That's them right there. Like audiovisual aides, the Pizzic sisters appeared ahead, trudging up Division Street. Jack beeped the horn and waved. The two of them looked up at us, amazed, and I stared right back at them.
Why did they bug you?
Who knows? They just did.
Jealous of your looks, he said.
My mouth scrunched to the side.
Yeah, right.
No, I mean it.
You put yourself next to those scrawny things, Del Rio, and it's like Miss Universe at the dog pound. Here, look at yourself.
He twisted the rearview mirror for me to see. My hair was blowing out behind me. I looked carefree. 75% pretty. I pushed the mirror back in place.
Yuck,
I said. He watched the road and me in glimpses.
Oh, by the way, I almost forgot. About that thing last night, I didn't mean to scare you or anything. You know, the beer, the heat, whatever. It was just one of those things. We're still friends, right?
My cuticles went white against the edge of my notebook.
Sure. I tried to call you after you went in. I knew you were upset.
I guess I didn't hear you. I was taking a bath.
No big deal. So let's just forget it, okay?
Fine. He tapped his fingers against the steering wheel. He wouldn't stop smiling.
Not to beat a dead horse or anything, he said, but did you say anything to them?
About Rita having a baby?
Yeah, that. About anything.
I shook my head. Why should I?
Right, exactly.
He pulled up in front of the school.
Well, you have a good day now. And don't let those two mutt faces bother you, because you're a special person.
Looking straight ahead, he reached over and took my hand, squeezing it softly. He held it for several seconds.
I let him.
Two mulish boys in uniform shirts and ties ran down to the curb as Jack pulled away.
Check it out, one of them said. How fast does that roller skate of your father's go? The other one asked me.
He smiled dopily, exposing a mouthful of surfboard teeth. He's not my father, I said. He's a close personal friend.
Miss Price, sister presentation said mid-morning.
I felt a pulse in my neck. I knew she'd caught me. Yes?
Can you tell us what they are? The remaining sacraments.
The others craned their necks to watch.
Baptism, confession, sister prompted.
A dozen hands flew into the air. The question was a cinch if you'd been listening. Holy orders? I said.
Eric has already said holy orders. Hope evaporated from sister's face. I saw her harden against me.
Did you do your homework last night?
Some of it.
Well,
sister said, some of it is unacceptable. A girl who can't be bothered to do the very first homework assignment of the school year is a girl who has a poor attitude in my book. Do you recall what my policy is on incomplete homework?
I'm not sure, I said.
Then you'd better take out your notebook and look it up. We'll wait for you.
Panic-stricken, I flipped and flipped the pages, but couldn't find it.
Number 14, sister said impatiently. Read it aloud.
A student who has not completed his homework assignment will automatically stay after school on that day.
That's correct, sister told me. And a girl who refuses to do her homework often enough may find herself on the sidelines instead of the graduation line come June. Isn't that right, class?
They nodded collectively. At noon, I avoided the lunchroom and went, instead, to the schoolyard. Kids chattered and screamed. Jump ropes slapped the asphalt. A large group of third graders were squabbling over a game of red light.
I hated this school. Would rather drown than go here.
At the periphery of the schoolyard, past the swings, the white plaster statue of St. Anthony stood surrounded by a semicircle of yellow chrysanthemums. I wandered over to the shrine, drawn by the presence of a solitary girl who appeared to be praying. I studied her from the back. Her legs were long and bony, praying mantis legs. The waist of her uniform buckled in several places beneath her belt. I approached quietly. "Hi," I said. She turned abruptly, gasping, slapping her flat chest. "Jesus, Mary and Joseph," she said. "You trying to give me a heart attack?" She was a seventh grader. That morning I'd watched her pick her nose during an assembly. "Excuse me," I said. I started to walk away. "Are you new here?" she said. "Not really. I moved here last year, from Connecticut." "I've been there. It's stupid. What made you come to this shitty school?"
Her wide black eyes were sunk deep into her face and roofed by a single bushy eyebrow. Smoke was leaking between the fingers of her cupped hand, and I wondered momentarily if she was somehow on fire before it occurred to me that she was having herself a cigarette, an act emphatically forbidden by the St. Anthony School Code of Conduct. I tried to relax my facial muscles of any visible signs of shock.
"Or should I say this prison," she continued. "Any school that doesn't even let you wear nylons."
She took an angry little drag off her cigarette in a way that managed somehow to be both defiant and covert.
"Homework, tests. I ain't their slave. Kenny and me got better things to do. You got a boyfriend?"
"No," I said. "Not exactly. Me and Kenny been going out for 7.5 months, since I was in sixth grade."
"Wow," I said. "Is he someone in your class?"
She snorted.
"Don't make me bust a gut. I ain't got time for babysitting. He's in high school.
Except he may quit next year when he turns 16. On account of all his teachers are out to get him. Plus, he seen this truck delivering stuff to their cafeteria one morning, and it had a dog food sign right on the side. Kenny says he ain't eating gravy train for anybody. They can keep their friggin' diploma.
Have you ever French kissed a guy?"
I looked away, then back. "I'd rather not say."
"That's my name, French. Except I ain't."
"What?"
"French. My name is Norma French, but I'm one quarter Cherokee Indian. Someone told me French kissing's a mortal sin, but that's nuts. Who decided that? The Pope? I'm sure he never tried it. That skinny guinea."
She held out her cigarette to me. "Drag?" I glimpsed Sister Presentation's classroom windows. "No, thanks."
"Kenny looks like Elvis. Who do you like, Elvis or the Beatles?"
I knew she was a loser. I knew exactly the kinds of things Jeanette Nord and I would have said about her behind her back. But I was suddenly filled with a fear she'd stop talking to me.
"Oh, Elvis," I said.
"Damn right." She took another sip off her cigarette. "King of rock and roll, and don't you forget it."
"Plus, I like the Beatles," I said.
The skin around her eyes stretched as she laughed. One of her front teeth was gray.
"Those friggin' weirdos," she said. "Cut the comedy."
She could see I needed straightening out, she said. The Beatles were all queers. You could tell that just by looking at them. Girls who made out in the indoor show were pretty hard up. When she was 2 years old, she'd swallowed a nail, and to this day still remembered the ambulance ride. In 1963, she shook hands at the stock car races with Miss America, who was ugly up close, whose makeup was thicker than the phone book.
"I have a friend who's a disc jockey," I ventured.
"Oh, yeah? I call those guys disc jerkies. They should just shut their traps and play the music. Watch this." She put her lit cigarette in her mouth and closed it. When she opened it again, the cigarette was sticking out from beneath her tongue, still burning.
"Oh, my God," I said. "Kenny taught me that.
Me and him might get engaged this year. He's thinking about it. The school bell gave 3 short blasts.
Ah, crap, Norma said.
Here.
She handed me the wet cigarette and ambled back toward the building. I stood frozen, holding it vertically and staring. Then I threw it on the ground and scuffed it out like Lassie.
The school day ended in church for First Wednesday confession. Most of the 8th graders were pew monitors for the younger grades, and the last to confess. I was one of the 6 in our class who had not been selected. Above me, a pious stained-glass angel hovered before the kneeling Blessed Virgin. The angel, as blonde as Marilyn Monroe and my mother, looked heavenward. Thick white smoke billowed at her feet, and I thought of the rocket launchings on TV that had made Daddy so excited. "Someday we'll drive down to Florida and see one in person," he had promised me. He was always full of promises. He had wrecked my whole life. Students' confessions drifted out from behind the curtain.
"Yeah, but Father, he started it, is what I'm telling you,"
one boy kept insisting.
Stacia Pizik, sitting amongst the 7th graders, kept looking back to make faces at her sister Rosalie. Norma French, a bit apart from the others, had apparently forgotten her head covering. Amidst the row of mantillas and floral hats and velvet-netted headbands, she sat with a bright red sweater on her head, the collar button fastened under her chin, the sleeves hanging down the sides of her face like beagle ears. Norma represented my sole inroad at St. Anthony's, and I cringed at my pitiful lack of progress. In the confessional, I listed my sins for Father Duptolsky: pride, swearing, disrespect for Ma. I omitted impure thoughts and deeds and began the act of contrition. My detention lasted an hour. On Division Street, Jack's MG rolled along the curb, following me. I pretended not to notice. It was a kind of game. If I turned around and looked, I'd lose.
"Hey," he finally called. "Want a ride?"
"Oh, hi," I said, faking surprise. "All right, sure."
The top was down. He squealed his tires taking off. His cigarette was burning in the ashtray. I reached over and took a puff without asking permission. He shook his head and smiled at me.
"Naughty, naughty," he said.
"You should get a radio for this car,"
I answered back. He smiled.
"Oh, yeah? Says who?"
"Says me. Dolores del Rio."